Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, everybody. This is Vinny Eastwood speaking from the Vinny Eastwood Show. And my very special guest that we've got on the line here is Mr. Kevin Annett. Now, people who don't know Kevin might remember that in recent history, Pope Benedict or Ratzinger or the KFC Ratzinger Burger, as I like to call him, has had to step down amid allegations of pedophilia and all of that kind of stuff. And the man who has his nose right on the scent of this dastardly, dark and disgusting trail is none other than Kevin Annett. And I'm quite honoured to be able to speak with you, mate.
Thanks, Vinny. It's good being back again.
Could you please elaborate perhaps a little further on this scandal and even perhaps give a wee background on yourself and your own personal exploits that brought you to this point?
Well, it's a long story, but kind of in a nutshell, the reason we're taking on the Vatican now is it led from the things I began to learn as a Protestant clergyman on the west coast of Canada about 20 years ago now, how children were being systematically taken in under the guise of education and religion and tortured, killed, trafficked, a long history of this state and church-sponsored genocide. And people can read all the evidence. You know, when you first hear this stuff, human reaction of, well, people have been kept in the dark all their lives is it can't be true. Well, I've always just pointed to hard evidence from documents, from people's testimonies. You can see all of that stuff about the Canadian genocide online. HiddenNoLonger.com. Just read it for yourself. Also, we did our first court case, common law court case, into genocide in Canada last year. The verdict that was brought in against Ratzinger and the Queen and others. All of that evidence, there's 150 exhibits up online showing how, you know, deliberate genocide occurred in these places. That you can find at our tribunal website, itccs.org. Right at the top, you'll see, you know, all of that information. So the evidence is there. It's really clear. And the most recent stuff, of course, is that with Ratzinger stepping down during the same period that our verdict came in, that wasn't accidental. They definitely took him out of the limelight for a while and brought in this, what people in Italy are calling the caretaker pope, Jorge Bergoglio, who, and this was in our recent posting at itccs.org, the man clearly is not an official pope because he doesn't wear the papal ring. He doesn't live in the Vatican. He makes individual pronouncements about things, but then the cardinals disavow it right away as if he doesn't represent policy, which is, you know, that's what popes do. They reflect the policy of the Vatican. For them to disavow themselves like that shows you he's not speaking for them. And he's not even present when cardinals are inaugurated anymore. Ratzinger is. That's from people, you know, in Rome. Media and church people have been telling us this. So clearly it's a big distraction going on because they're very worried about all of this stuff coming out, not just about the you know, trafficking, openly trafficking children and protecting child rapists in the Catholic Church. But clearly this, you know, new shift in geopolitics going on where the Vatican, like it's always done in history, is trying to play both sides. It's cozying up to China. It's lining up with America against Russia, which is why Obama's going on Thursday to speak to the Pope, followed by Queen Elizabeth after that. I mean, it's all, you know, the old political game, and yet they're if you like, their pants are hanging down around their ankles now. They're exposed about this stuff, so they've got to do a lot of damage control.
What kind of apparatus or resources do they have to do damage control? I mean, don't they own and control a significant portion of the media or something?
They do, but I mean, it shows you that, you know, like the biggest example of that is Time magazine naming him as Man of the Year, based on what? Especially consider his own dirty past from Argentina, where he was trafficking children of political prisoners. But it kind of shows you, Vinny, that with all the money and influence in the world, the truth has an ability to influence a lot of the people otherwise. And we do know from all over the world, the statistics show that people are leaving the Catholic Church in greater numbers. Even in conservative countries like Ireland or Austria, you know, there's a deficit. 30, 40,000 people left the church are not going anymore over last year. So it shows you that people are voting with their feet. And, you know, it's kind of like any ruler needs a certain aura of legitimacy. And they've got to do, regardless of their power, they've got to kind of play to the masses to some degree. So I think that's part of what we're seeing.
How exactly do you see this playing out?
Well, I think one scenario would certainly be that since Ratzinger has never actually been deposed, I mean, that seems to be what's indicated now, what they're doing, what's in the Catholic Church, there's a way to manage situations like this where you have, it's called coadjutors, where an archbishop can come in alongside another archbishop and kind of rule the diocese together. That's what we're seeing on a big scale. So I think for the next little while, you're going to see that kind of shared power going on. But what's significant is that all the recent appointments of cardinals in that have all been Germans. It's a German running the Vatican Bank. That whole kind of crew that was with Ratzinger is still running the show, the same way that when Obama came in, he pretty much kept Bush's cabinet intact. The same thing going on in Rome. So, you know, whether or not that kind of pulls them out of this, I don't know. It's uncertain. But what is encouraging is how governments now and courts are even beginning to look at the possibility of suing the Vatican. And that's one of the reasons I'm going to Brussels this week to help with that process.
Sue them, how much money would you want?
Pardon me?
If you're going to be suing them, is it for damages? I mean, how much money, are we talking compensations or dollar signs here?
No, we're not talking tort law. We're not talking, you see, that's the way the guilty tend to sidetrack things into kind of issues of personal injury and financial compensation. These are crimes of genocide, crimes against humanity. And like with the first case, we didn't ask for any kind of compensation. The citizen jury sends Ratzinger and the Queen and others to 25 years in prison without the possibility of parole. And so we're looking at shutting down these institutions and putting their head officers in jail.
Well, is there some form of judicial corruption? I mean, because if we're talking about a pedophile ring of this kind, they wouldn't have been able to exist for so long unless they had the bulk of high-level, high-ranking judges in their back pocket.
Absolutely, that's been the history. There are people who have come forward, though. I mean, like in any system, there's honest people who are caught up in it. They don't like what they're doing. They're worried about their pension, you know, et cetera. But, you know, we've already had, for example, in Belgium, this politician, Laurent Louis, has come forward, naming child trafficking going on in the government, naming the judges. He's had a price to pay. He was attacked by police the other day when he was doing political campaigning. But, you know, as that happens, what you find in a system like this is one person breaks and others will come forward because everyone's worried. You know, when you're involved in a crime, you're looking over your shoulder all the time and you're not it's not inherently a very stable situation. So we're hoping that we reach a certain critical mass where it becomes possible for more people to come forward.
Are we talking kind of class action sort of thing?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's definitely when you're dealing with a crime this big, it's definitely on behalf of many people. So, yeah, definitely a class action.
Okay. And what's the legal term for that? I mean, how many people have to stand up before it actually becomes a class action? There's a certain amount of people that need to be involved with a similar lawsuit against the same entity in order for it to qualify. And
right.
The other element is, what if all of these people are under great threat and risk by a ruthless, murderous, genocidal, pedophile gang that they might not want to come forward?
Yeah. Well, definitely, and I think most won't. But, you know, it's a thing to remember, and I should get your listeners to go to our website, itccs.org. In the right-hand margin, you'll see a thing that says the Community Training Manual for the Common Law Court. And in there, we talk a little bit about this, the history of common law, what it is, but also how different standards apply when you're dealing with crimes of genocide. Because, for example, the requirement under legal process of proving intent as well as act, and there's a lot of precedence to show that when you're dealing with crimes of genocide, where whole systems and countries and churches in this case are involved in helping child rape, protecting the abusers, all of that stuff, you don't have to prove intent on the part of individual perpetrators of that, because they're operating in a whole system of implied intent. You know, when you're ordained a Catholic priest, you know you'll be able to rape children and get away with it. That's the law. Like in a genocidal regime, it's the system itself and its ideology that's on trial, not just individuals. So there's different standards here, and it wouldn't be like a customary class action, which is designed to get damages for the plaintiffs. This is indicting a system, and the only way you resolve that is by getting rid of the system and replacing it with something else and seeing the chief officers go to jail. So it's kind of more in that light.
How long has the Vatican been around, the system that we're talking about here? I mean, when was the Vatican City first established?
That's a very important question. The modern Vatican was established in 1929 by Benito Mussolini, because between 1870 and 1929, it didn't exist. Garibaldi had disestablished the papal states when Italy was unified. Mussolini reestablished it as a corporate entity. You know, fascism or corporatism is a system he set up in conjunction with the Catholic Church, and then they created those regimes in Spain and like all over the world. So the modern Vatican comes out of that whole period, but of course the Catholic Church goes back to really the 4th century, when it was the extension, the continuation really of the Roman Empire.
Italian fascism created the modern Vatican.
It was kind of a joint operation. They kind of, Mussolini established the Vatican Bank. They compensated the Catholic Church with over a billion lira. They created the Catholic Church as a theocratic state. They jointly ruled the Italians with the Italian government. So, for example, today in Italian courts, no judge can bring in a ruling involving anything to do with the Catholic Church unless they go and consult the local bishop first. So, you know, the church is helping to run the courts, run the education system. Everybody gets indoctrinated with Catholic theology from age 5 up, regardless of who they are in Italy. So, it's like that.
Well, what does that remind me of? Yes, in New Zealand we have an organization called the Police Complaints Authority, where you will go and complain about how the police have mistreated you. And incidentally, every single worker there is a policeman who doesn't want to hear your complaints.
Right. Well, that's the thing, you know, we're dealing with all over the world, this kind of corporatist model where it's not publicly accountable systems. It's corporate, they're agents of employees of a corporation, and they're accountable to that corporation, not to the people at all.
So I think maybe at its core, what we're talking about is a lack of accountability on behalf of the general public. Basically, we're all victims, particularly those in Italy who have to be forcibly indoctrinated into one particular type of religion at that particular point. Well, what's the percentage of actual, you know, people who identify themselves as Catholic in Italy?
Oh, well, I mean, officially, It's a majority. I think it's somewhere around 85% or something. You get minorities here and there, that, like there's small religious minorities, but they're persecuted. Like, perfect example is early Protestants in Italy were called Waldensians after this guy Peter Waldo. And they just didn't believe in the Vatican. They had their own congregations. They read the Bible, which was a no-no. And they were persecuted. They were almost exterminated. And those who are still around today, I went to one of their churches in northern Italy, Turin, I think it was. And they have to pay more taxes. No other churches don't have to pay taxes at all. The Catholic Church is tax-free, but they have to pay taxes. They have to pay a special fine for not being Catholic. I mean, they're harassed by the police. So, I mean, these religious wars continue to the day today.
That seems to be the same as all the wars. They start off really, really bloody and terrible, and then they're like, you know what? It's actually really difficult to enslave and kill people by hand. Let's use money to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Now, in that context, let's say, hypothetically, money is slavery. Okay, however much money you got, that's however much people are enslaved to you at the end of the day. How much money has the Vatican got?
Well, we figure that just the takeout of the collection plate every year, we're talking 50 billion plus just from the collection plate. Oh yeah, well, and then you've got what are called financial concordats or treaties where over 100 countries fund taxpayers' money right to the Vatican Bank. You've got its assets in the trillions, undoubtedly, and you add up all their property, it's the richest corporation on the planet, hands down.
The entire country of New Zealand has $50 billion of debt, and that was like a record for that's our national debt that they get per year just in donations alone, not including their business interests and the Vatican Bank and all of that other jazz? Holy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, world debt could be wiped out tomorrow with what the Vatican has. But, you know, it's kind of like this hypocrite who's now posing as Pope Jorge Bergoglio. You know, he walks around talking about being a church of the poor. I mean, that's nonsense. I mean, why doesn't he just sell their assets then? He's never going to do that. He'd last about 3 minutes if he tried that.
Well, does the Pope get paid?
Well, they don't have an actual income, but I mean, it's like the head of these massive corporations who agree to work for a dollar a year. You know, they're getting massive benefits on the side.
And, like stock options and what have you.
Yeah, it's kind of like the way the Soviet Union used to be. Like, there weren't individual capitalists, but they were part of a state that was the capitalist. And it's similarly in the Vatican. Their whole corporation, by being a member of it, you're endlessly affluent.
Oh, because everybody, they just take care of you, you know, and just write it off as a business expense.
Right.
So turn religion into a business, and they've made a killing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Sound like Scientology to you?
Well, I mean, that's like any religion where people surrender their own capacity to think. It's the perfect slave system. And, you know, when we try talking to Catholics about this, some of them are open, but by and large, they literally figure they're going to go to hell if they even challenge anything the Pope says. I mean, it's a brilliant system for mass mind control.
Almost as effective as American television. If I may say so, this is the real scary part about it, is it just... the depth to which this institution has a deep root and effect on humanity. Now, you know what it's like to lose a loved one or lose a job that you really liked, or just basically lose something that you were totally devoted to for your entire life. And imagine somebody comes and says, I'm going to have to snatch this away because it's not true. It's a lie. Now, just going through that by yourself is quite a painful experience, you know, and it actually destroys your life in a lot of cases. Sometimes you get depressed or whatever, but that's just you. That's just one person who one thing's happening to. How many Catholics are there? Like 2 billion? Or
about that. Well, officially, I mean, when you say a Catholic, they're cultural Catholics where they use that identification. Probably only about 10% of them go to Mass regularly.
and probably about 90% of them will suffer cognitive dissonance if there's a public announcement that the Vatican's being dissolved, and they'll just go, no, 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 it's not true, and they'll just keep practicing anyway. And then about 10% will wake up, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's kind of likely, yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry to be cynical here, because I think that's actually the point in trying to do something. You hear about that that Harvard study that everybody touts, you know, about electrocuting somebody to death because a guy in a lab coat told you, you know, wondering how the Nazis managed to get everybody to just kill innocent people really easily. And turns out, you know, if you've got a uniform or some kind of respected position, hey, you kill. And
something like 15% won't under any circumstances, or maybe it's less, but it's... It's a 15% figure stuck in my mind.
Well, there were three studies that were done, and the later two studies don't get mentioned. And what was the other one? Firstly, before they got somebody in the chair to electrocute somebody to death at the hands of a coke-touting individual, they watched somebody else electrocute somebody to death.
Yeah.
And about 90% of them who saw it being done didn't do it themselves.
Yeah.
And they did another test where they had an example of somebody in front of them refusing to deliver lethal electricity to a person, and then near on 100% of them refused.
Mm-hmm. Right. Somebody has to set an example, and once an example is set, others find it easier to go along with refusing. And also the person has to be a stranger. If they know the person, it's a lot harder for them to do it. But they find that in combat all the time with soldiers.
Now, this also means you personally exposing this kind of scumbaggery with regard to the Vatican operation and the child pedophilia and basically it's just lies upon lies. It's kind of like a house of cards, really. Each card is another lie, and it can only just take one or two big lies at the very, very top to topple over, and then the whole house of cards comes down. But what's going to happen with all that money? What's going to happen with all these disenfranchised people? On top of what's going to happen in terms of the lawsuit and compensation for, in some cases, entire generations of people who've suffered mass genocide over the years?
Yeah, there can't be compensation ever for it. That's the lawyer. You know, lawyers try to get us to view things, the world through their eyes, and they think that if you give people some money and an official apology, that somehow resolves or heals something. It never does. And, matter of fact, it makes it worse. Because the victims, and I work with many of them, I have for many years, when you're victimized by this and you're being told on the one hand you can't talk about it, but here's some money, shut up, you're worse off because no one has heard you. Your pain is not being resolved, but everybody is now treating you like, what's your problem? Get better. And that leads to greater levels of suicide and self-destruction. So the system knows that. That's why they issue the apology and money, because they know people kill themselves off that much quicker. That's happened in Canada. The death rate among residential school survivors increased after the apology.
What kind of pain exactly are they trying to alleviate here? Now, this isn't about giving compensation, is it? It's about bringing the guilty to justice, pure and simple. That's actually really the only kind of compensation that I think would have any solace whatsoever about losing ancestors to these thugs, is to know that not only do those responsible for covering it up, participating in it, get brought to justice, but the apparatus itself that protects them from judgment and justice in the first place is dismantled so that this can't happen again.
Exactly, yeah, that's what's got to be done. I mean, it was supposed to have happened after World War II, for example. You know, we know, in fact, the Nazis just shifted location. They infiltrated the U.S. government heavily. There's a good book about that called The Fourth Reich by Jim Mars, where he shows the Nazi apparatus just shifted over to the U.S. industrial complex, and they inhabited the State Department and fashioned Cold War politics and everything. So these things tend to kind of replant themselves and grow again. But what we can do is to at least say these crimes will not be allowed to occur again, and they've got to be stopped as they happen now. So, I mean, that's a big undertaking, but, you know, I've found over the years we have a disproportionate impact from our numbers. simply because we're standing on the truth, and there's all these people, witnesses out there who affirm what we're saying.
It is quite difficult to argue with somebody who's telling the truth, have you noticed?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I mean, when you're wrong, and you suddenly realize it, and then you're like, you've either got a, what was it Mark Twain said? He said, when an honest man is confronted with the truth that he's wrong, he will either cease to be wrong or cease to be honest.
That's right.
Yeah. Sounds about right, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What kind of a, I mean, you were a priest, right?
Not Catholic, but I was a Protestant clergyman, yeah.
All right. And to you, finding out this truth about the organization that you're kind of affiliated with, off to the side at least, what was your emotional reaction to that? Because this will play out for every single Catholic listening.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I didn't believe it at first, but I couldn't deny what people were telling me. And you see, I think I often say ignorance and naivety is helpful, because if I'd have really known what I was part of and what I was dealing with, as a father with two young kids, I mean, your first reaction is, well, geez, I mean, who can deal with this? And I would have been tempted to pull back. But then I couldn't have really lived with my conscience or faced my kids every day if I had known that, well, I was expected to cover up murder, and I did. I couldn't have done that. So even if I hadn't have led to what happened, I probably would have ended up leaving the church, because I wouldn't have wanted to be part of that kind of institution. But you learn things in pieces, and then finally the whole picture starts falling into place, and you go, oh my God, like, I have to rethink everything.
Well, and did you feel like kind of lost? You're like, where the hell am I? Oh, that was what
it was
like for me. And again,
yeah, it was easier for me because I lost everything. I lost my family. I was tossed out of any possibility of working. I became like a pariah in my own culture. So
oh, that makes it a lot easier, does it?
It really makes you rethink things quickly, because you have to. Whereas if you have options, we tend to hold on to those. We think, well, you know, I want to keep this, I want to keep that, and you don't tend to think in the bigger terms, you know.
I guess you're right. And I guess most people do get a little too comfortable. I think I'm probably even guilty of this myself.
Well, you know, we're being human, I guess, is, you know, there's that animal part of us who just wants to hunker down in a little hole and be safe and secure. But, I mean, none of us are safe. It's kind of like being under artillery bombardment. There's no safe place. I mean, look at what the planet is going through. And as long as we operate in that old way of looking for our cozy little hole, we'll die that much quicker. And I think that's what people are waking up to. This is not just about child abuse. This is about our future as a species.
In what way is it about the future of the species?
Well, I think that the very same machine that targeted and destroys our children, or attacked and destroyed indigenous people over the world, is rapidly consuming our planet. It's turning us all into components of itself. You just have to sit on a bus and look at kids with their little iPod machines to see that. And it's a system of death. It's a system that, you know, who knows why. I mean, this is almost a plot of a bad sci-fi movie, but it's like there's some kind of entity sucking the energy out of our planet and all of us. And, you know, look up in the sky, look at chemtrails, look at Fukushima, look at all of it. And, you know, we have to ask ourselves really what's causing that and end it, because I think we've got a limited time, and if we don't.
Yeah, well, the thing that was sucking Bill Clinton out of his legacy was Monica Lewinsky.
There's a joke about that. I don't know. The joke is Monica Lewinsky has decided to run for the Republicans this year because the Democrats left a bad taste in her mouth. Apologies to anyone who's offended. Well, I won't apologize for offending people. I never have.
I mean, sweet mercy, we're talking about like child rape and pedophilia and everything here. We can't tell a dirty joke? Come
no.
on, get serious.
All right. Yeah, all right, true enough.
I mean, this is the thing. People believe that it's about intensity. You know, you can only talk about one subject. You can only talk about it in a particular way and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Look, if you're not having fun while you're talking about stuff that scares the bejesus out of you, you're not going to want to actually even listen to more of the information, are you?
Right.
And you're going to increase your ignorance because the subject learning material is not, you know, jazzed up a little bit by having a little bit of frickin' fun, you know?
Totally, totally. And as a matter of fact, I've been tempted at times to almost go on the road in a comedy act called Under the Robes, where we kind of expose this stuff literally. You know, I mean, that's the way we do cope and try to, because at some point when you're confronting this stuff, you got to laugh at it. Literally, it's so absurd. It's like, you know, when do we wake up here, people?
And in some cases, it's almost comical. Like you see a cockroach on the floor and you go to stomp on it, but you see all these other cockroaches just scurry out from under the thing, and they're all pulling and they're all pushing together. Like, no, don't crush our friend. You know, that's what's happening. I think is like this massive boot of humanity has just been like sitting on the couch for goodness knows long, and now it's getting motivated to just walk over there and just stomp on this big disgusting roach.
Well, it's kind of a selection principle. You see it in nature, right? Those of us who survive are going to be the ones who've woken up. The others will be killed off.
Well, either that or the ones who have woken up will be the first to be killed off, and then the rest of them will be enslaved.
Well, that's if you stay locked into the system, but people are getting out of it more and more. I see that all over in all my travels, that people are literally realizing it's time to get out
of
everything.
To me, a predator drone with a Hellfire missile that can be launched anywhere on Earth kind of precludes the possibility of getting out of the system.
Well, yeah, if they target you individually, but I meant more like people withdrawing their energy, their consent. It's a really fragile system because it's hierarchical, and it depends on people's cooperation, right? And that's the beauty of common law. It says, you know, a statute brought in by a government, and that's all most government laws are, statutes which exist to fund and maintain the government, not the people. A statute has no lawful effect unless you would consent to it. You know, you say no, and the statute has no power over you. It's that simple, and any judge knows that.
Yeah, absolutely true. Now, that means the Vatican has power over everybody, and I think David Whitehead and myself have said this a number of times. Humanity needs to be reacquainted with the most important word in the English language. No.
No, exactly. It really has no power over us. It doesn't even exist as a state. That's all fiction, you know.
They're the Goblin King in The Labyrinth. Have you seen that movie?
No, the one with David Bowie? No, I never saw that.
Yeah. Well, you're not missing much. But but in the very end, the Goblin King gets all of his power taken away from him because she just has a realization that this is a fantasy world, and you have no power over me,
mm-hmm.
You know? And that's kind of like a metaphor, I think, for how the Vatican or our politicians or the police or anything get away with any of this scumbaggery, is because they've got a large veil of illusion that masks the fact that they're basically a mailed fist.
Right. Well, I'll give you just something. I was in South Dakota working with some farmers last week, and who are trying to challenge the fraudulent mortgages that are judges are helping, like, grab people's lands illegally. And one of them said he went to a local Catholic church, and this is out in a town of, like, 300 people in the middle of the prairies. And he said his priest the other day said, somebody sent me a note saying the Pope is the Antichrist. I don't want to hear that. And he got up and he stormed out of the church. Talk about a guilty conscience. I mean, and that's happening in a little prairie town. You know, it's like...
Yeah, well, I think I saw this presentation by a South African priest, actually, who kind of turncoated on the Catholics, I think, and he was talking about the Antichrist and how there was something like was it Bobo? I forget if it might have been 9 or 17 references to the Antichrist in the Bible or something like that.
Yep.
And he said that the only thing that currently exists on Earth that actually fits into all of them, it's not Prince Charles, it's not Barack Obama or anything. The only thing that it could actually possibly be is the Vatican itself.
Yeah, the seven heads of the beast, seven hills of Rome. In the book of Revelation, they refer to the Antichrist not as a person, but a place. And, you know, which he's talking Rome.
Could you elaborate? Because I don't know much of the backstory about this kind of thing.
Oh, well, I mean, it had to do with, in the book of Revelation, he's talking about the final conflict between God and Satan, if you like, and a whole 1,000-year period where the Antichrist is ruling the earth, killing off a third of humanity, including all of what are called the saints, I guess the people who have woken up or whoever. And but then he's finally thrown down and destroyed, but continually making references to the place where it lives, the seven heads of the beast. And he was, John who wrote the book, he was actually living in as a political prisoner on the island of Patmos when he wrote that. And he was talking about the Roman Empire, but that's the Catholic Church, just the modernized version of it. And the proof of that is even in the, if you read the language, you know, the importance of words, they kind of reveal the truth about something. They call the Pope the Vicar of Christ. Well, vicarious means, look it up in the dictionary, replacement or substitute for Christ. He carries all the titles of the Roman Emperor. He's the intermediary between heaven and earth. That was an old Roman idea. It's not a Christian idea at all, right? So know what you're dealing with.
Well, let's say, for example, the Vatican is the Antichrist kind of thing. And it talks about like a 1,000-year rule before it gets overthrown, does it?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Well, how long have they been in power now? Since like 1929?
Well, again, 1,000-year, you got to sometimes not take those things literally. You know, there's numerological references to things and that. So who knows if they meant literally 1,000 years. But it's kind of a millennia was seen as a period of time. So it could have been not necessarily 1,000 years, but who knows?
Yeah. Could have been 1,000 days, 1,000 minutes, 1,000 hours. Who knows? Because the other element here is interpretation. In fact, it's funny we should be getting into this because I was wondering yesterday, interpretation. Okay, how does one actually interpret the Bible? Because there's so many interpretations out there. How do you take it literally and how do you take it figuratively?
Well, I mean, first of all, take something, the first book in Exodus. I mean, you can't interpret it unless you have the translation right. And if you go back to the Hebrew, the words in the if you translate, and I did this when I was in seminary, I said, okay, let's take Genesis 1 and translate it directly from the Hebrew. And you get a completely different story. And I mean completely. Like, the original Hebrew says it wasn't a God, it was the Elohim. And I am in Hebrew means it's pluralized. They were the gods in assembly. And it never says in the beginning. Bara, well, let me get... In Hebrew, it didn't say in the beginning, it said when it began. So there was no beginning point. It says when this all began, the gods cut down the heavens and the earth. They didn't create. The word is bara, which means to cut down and destroy. So I took this to my Hebrew prof and says, in the Hebrew it says, when they started, the gods destroyed heaven and earth. What does that have to do in the beginning, God created the heaven and earth? That's an exact, totally opposite rendition. And he didn't want to comment, which is kind of funny because I guess his job depended on towing the line, right? But something very different is in the Bible when you read it from its original Hebrew and Greek. And that's why they used to burn people for translating the Bible directly from the Hebrew and Greek, like William Tyndale did in England. And he got burned at the stake for doing it because the people were opening up to what's really in there. And it's very different than what we're taught in Sunday school.
My wife has been watching a TV series called Ancient Aliens recently.
Uh-huh.
And there is a hell of a lot of references in ancient texts, particularly ancient texts. I don't know what this is about the ancient world that makes it so prone to reckon that aliens and gods and everything are all over the show and providing us technology and telling us how to build cities and learn languages and have rules and regulations and all of that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, when you go on in Genesis, the basic story is that humanity was created as this thing, man, Adam, which means of the earth, created from the soil, literally. He was created first like a robot without awareness of what they call the difference between good and evil. They said, you can eat from the tree, but not the tree of knowledge. And then the serpent comes along, and he's seen as the bad guy in the church Bible, but the actual story has... The serpent was a symbol of wisdom and beauty in the ancient Near East. And divinity, if you like, comes to Adam and Eve and says, you're not going to die, your eyes are going to be open, and you're going to become like the gods, which is a good thing, you know, to achieve awareness. And they do it, and the gods get all pissed off and banish them and fill them with shame and self-destruction. Now, I mean, that's a good description of what's happened in human history, right? We're warring against each other because this, whatever this was, the gods, the entities, whoever, were angry with us and had to mess us up inside so we would destroy one another rather than become aware. And I mean, that's the basic message in Genesis 1, but that's hidden from us. We're taught something totally different, and I think it's not accidental we're taught it differently.
Well, no wonder. I mean, it's kind of like how a parent tells you, don't question, just do it.
Right.
Right. It's very easy to tell people what to do if they're used to not questioning you.
Yeah. Yeah, but the basic question a child always has is why? Because we're born with that. That's what we mean. Common law comes out of this natural law recognition. We are born with the knowledge of good and evil, right and wrong. It's not taught to us by anybody. Those are inherent. You know, the American founding fathers say that's why we have unalienable liberties, because they're born in us. They're not given to us by a ruler, which is the old Roman notion of law. You know, you get those two different legal systems contending all the time.
Well, this is the contention, I believe, between good and evil at the end of the day, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is you have to be able to tell the truth. And the problem is, telling the truth doesn't have a whole lot of rewards for the person telling it, I've found. Only rewards for the greater mass of people once they all become aware of the truth.
Right. No, yeah, that's it. It's a collective thing, waking up.
It's actually quite sad, really, to think about just how many people have died, how many people are still currently donating to a... organization that contributed to so much genocide, and on top of that, the fact that they wouldn't even believe the truth even if it was broadcast on mainstream news, they still wouldn't believe it.
Well, unfortunately, it's the case that as much as parents love their children, if loving and defending their children requires that they go up against the power of the state and the church, they'll go along with the destruction of their own children. And that's because what matters more to them is obedience rather than the love of their children. And I've seen that so many times, I can't deny now that that's true with a majority. So, you know, like I say to Catholics going in, we're not talking about the murder of some far-off exotic people like Aboriginals or whoever who you don't give a shit about. We're talking about the safety of your own children sitting here. It's Catholic children who are being victimized by Catholic laws, and yet they still don't respond by and large. So, you know, go figure.
Well, you can't legislate for stupidity.
Yep.
Have you noticed that actually it takes a degree of intelligence to accept that the things that you held near and dear to you simply aren't true, and you have to move on and get over it, don't you think?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And like I said, with me, it was easier because when your whole life is destroyed, you have to start anew. And I had to do that. But, you know, so in a way I think of the way I was when I was 20 or 30, and it was like, oh, forget it. I was so naive and stupid, you know.
Oh, yeah. I think life is a perpetual cycle of just constantly realizing how naive and stupid you are.
Yeah.
It's a never-ending nightmare. How many things do I believe in that get like disproved like almost on a daily basis? It's like, damn it, can't believe in that anymore. Damn it, that's not good for me anymore.
Well, life's a search. The law of uncertainty, right? That's the one thing you can rely on. Things are uncertain.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing. I think uncertainty really confuses people. And let's bring some certainty back. I mean, I'm kind of tired of living in confusion, of not right. knowing who to trust or what's real and what's not, and whether or not my perception controls reality or reality indoctrinates my perception. I don't know.
Well, I think you know within yourself a difference. You know what's true in yourself to some degree. I mean, it varies a lot with each person, but I mean, we know, for example, that we can't observe 95% of the universe. Dark energy, dark matter, it's just not there. We'll never be able to know it. But the interesting thing is that means 95% of us, we can't know because we're an integral part of the universe. We're not separate. So there's all of this stuff in us we'll never know, right? And it can either cause you to go nuts or to say, well, there is an aspect I do know, and I'm very certain about that. And that's all I can say about myself. You know, I know I can't cooperate with this stuff going on. It doesn't matter if I win or lose. It doesn't matter any of that. You just can't go along. Right?
Yeah. There was a speech delivered by a student in the 60s, Mario something.
It's like, Mario Savio.
Yeah.
Free speech movement.
Yeah. There's times when the actions of the machine become so odious and make you so sick at heart that you can't participate. You can't even passively participate. And in fact, you have to throw your body on the gears and on the levers and on the wheels, and you've got to make it stop.
Right. It's beautiful. And exactly. You've got to know where the wheels and levers are. Right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're engineering the destruction, as it were. Well, how exactly do you reckon we can accomplish that then?
Well,
what are the gears? What are the levers? I mean, seriously, where does the Vatican actually draw its power from? You know, is there like is it plugged into a tesseract or something like that?
Good question. I got different ideas about that, but I know at an immediate kind of material level, we know exactly where it comes from. You know, money. And political and legal protection, just like the mafia does, right? You get rid of that and they fall. And I've seen that, right? I've seen that happen with individual churches and that. But on another level, I think the control runs a lot deeper. And, you know, we see that in the degree of mind control. I think there's definitely a spiritual aspect of this that only gets clear when you're able to go that way in yourself. And a lot of people involved in this work aren't willing to go there. So there, it's funny, a lot of the atheists and secular humanists and that who I thought were going to be natural allies are really against this work. And I said, well, don't you want to expose organized religion? Yeah, but I don't want to offend my Catholic friends. I mean, I hear that from them all the time. And that's because they don't have that deeper understanding. They're just operating kind of a pure rational level, and you don't get it when you do that. There's something much deeper going on.
Oh, I don't want to make my friends not be enslaved anymore, you know. I'll feel bad about it.
Right. Yeah, like I'm still waiting for the atheists to get on board.
Oh, yeah. Did you know that there's actually a new church called the Church of Atheism? They just built it in England.
Well,
it's where atheists could come and worship nothing.
Well, otherwise known as the Roman Catholic Church, because there's no bigger atheist than the Pope. He says, don't look to God, look to me.
I am God's right hand, you know. None of you can interpret God's will by yourself, you know. Right, that would imply right. that you have free will. No, it's my will. Right. Damn it, my will.
Yeah. Atheist church hand, that's funny.
I love that, you know. They just sit there, clasp their hands together. Dear nothing, can you give me a pony?
Or what they say, you know, when you're an atheist and you die, you're all dressed up and nowhere to go.
Well, you know, they have a lower survival rate than people who believe in God, or at least in military POW camps are concerned anyway, because when a believer's locked away in that prison with no hope of rescue and he's all alone, he's not really alone if he believes in God. And an atheist is, they're all alone.
Well, yeah, and I mean, like, the classic case of all the Iraqi kids, or no, they were Iranian during the Iraq-Iran war, they're handed a key. And they say, as soon as you die, you're going right to heaven. Here's the key. So, yeah, who wouldn't want to die? There's 70 virgins waiting for you, I hear, right? In Islam.
Yeah.
You die for the faith. I mean, it's that whole thing. And it also allows you to commit atrocities much more easier than an atheist would. The atrocities, they found, are committed much more by people who are devout believers in religion.
Well, you know, I think that the believers in religion don't even believe in the religion itself. And in fact, it comes down to simply authority. Whoever's got the authority can commit atrocities and make you want to commit them.
And what they found was interesting. In World War II, the American Army found that only 1 in 10 of their soldiers were aiming the gun at another human being and pulling the trigger. That most guys in combat could not actually kill another human being. They'd shoot wide, they would kind of lob the grenade without looking at the person, whatever, but they couldn't shoot and execute another human being. By the Vietnam War, it was up to 90% who could. And that was because of television. That was because of the numbing down, the psychic numbing and brutalization process of television, which was brought in during the MKUltra experimental period with the CIA. We know what television does to the human brain. It puts it in the alpha wave state. Semi-consciousness, open to suggestion, deliberate, right? They conditioned a whole nation to be killers. And, you know, they tried that stuff out on Indians first. I mean, that's all of the stuff we've uncovered about these institutions, right?
It's like a really quite a frightening aspect when you think about reaction time. I was interviewing Suzanne Posel about this, and she was talking about violent video games like first-person shooters, you know, where you're a guy with a gun and you shoot other people and what have you, and you play against other people as well. It turns out that when you're in that wave state and you're playing these games that are indicative of reaction kill, it actually programs your brain to be less capable of dealing with stress. When you don't have instantaneous responses, your body kind of goes into a rage state sort of thing. And there's so many instances of children in the United States who just like weren't allowed to like go on their Facebook. Like the parents said, you know, you're banned from Facebook or whatever. And they actually killed their parents over it. And then they're in the car later on going, oh my God, I don't know what the hell happened. Why did I do that? Oh my God. You know? And when you've got an entire nation like that, that's ready to just...
Well, I can tell you why, too. They've done tests on this. There was a neurologist who was on the public television last month, one of the few times I watched television, but the show was always interesting. He said they've proven now that what happens with the laptop or these handheld, you know, iPads and all that, it keeps the brain in the analytical mode where you have no empathy, because it's when you're, like, daydreaming or not tied in analytically to the use of your brain that you can feel empathy for other people, or imagination and empathy all come from that non-analytical part of the brain. That's shut down by these machines. And you compensate by feeling affection towards the machine. I mean, this is very bizarre, but it's like you're in a love relationship with this machine, and you take that away, yeah, you're going to provoke violence. So it's the most hideous evil addiction going on now with the next generation, where they're plugging them in to be love the machine, literally, and to make it seem it that is more real than anyone around you. You have no empathy anymore. You can see that in among kids now. This neurologist went into a kindergarten and said, when is the last time any of you daydreamed? And they didn't know what daydreaming was. They didn't understand what he meant. If you can imagine that.
Whoa.
So, I mean, yeah, turning us into components, definitely. And that's to me the real genocide. That's the thing we've got to fight the most, because if you don't have your own mind and soul, what difference does any of this other stuff make, right?
Well, you know, I gotta say, I daydream quite a bit still. even though it's my job to sit at a computer.
Yeah. Well, you were raised, no, but how old are you now?
29.
oh, I thought you were older than that.
Most people mistake me for that.
Well, you're carrying the burdens of the world, Vinny, that's why.
Well, actually it's because most of my friends are a lot older. They're like, most of them are actually about around about twice my age, and I've absorbed their knowledge rather than the knowledge of those who are my age, and so people think I'm older.
That makes sense. Well, you know, I was going to say, like, from the older generation, we weren't raised in computers at all. We had typewriters in our school. Computers didn't come until after I was out of university. So, yeah, it's a different way of related to reality, for sure.
Well, I see this kind of greater spectrum of knowledge that maybe a lot of people my age don't have yet. In fact, most people don't develop awareness like mine until they reach their 40s or something like that, and they start to question, you know, have I been spending my entire life living somebody else's dream? And have no, when was the last time I had an original thought? You know, it takes several decades of the system messing with you for a lot of people to get it. And then when they do, they've spent most of their young life working away, having a fun time. And then at the end of it, they've got nothing to show for it emotionally, spiritually, intellectually, and in most cases, financially either. And you realize I spent my entire life for nothing because the entire life I was living was something somebody else was telling me to live, and I didn't want to live it, but I just gave up and did it anyway because I was afraid of having an original thought.
Well, that is because at a very young age, people had that battered out of them, and that's the child. You know, you see, like, the abuse of children is fundamentally necessary in a hierarchical society. Any hierarchy requires that children be brutalized at a young age, either physically, emotionally, spiritually, so that they'll obey orders of a minority. And that's the way you do it. And, you know, the Jesuits had this old saying, give me a child for 7 years and he'll be ours for life. Yeah, damn right. I mean, that's what the whole system does. You gotta hit them before they're five, really before they're seven, because if they're on their own, they learn freedom and they can go back to it. But if you batter that up before seven, forget it. It's like a sexually abused person, if it happens before they're two, can never recover because it's pre-verbal. They have no way of getting their mind around what happened to them. They usually end up multiple personality disorder, or some extreme schizophrenia or something, because they can't integrate their personality. And that's what I think in a bass scale happens to us living in this culture.
It's like infecting you with a parasite of suffering so that you'll be a controlled little robot.
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, Kevin, we come to the end of the first hour now, so we'll go on a quick break. Bear in mind, ladies and gentlemen, this is a listener-supported broadcast, so we need your donations and your subscriptions as well, preferably into that KiwiBank account there, because they don't take a percentage off of the donations like PayPal does. So if you'd rather fund me rather than PayPal, you know, it's a New Zealand bank account number, though, so it might be a little bit difficult to figure out, but in either case, go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and give something today so that we can continue to finance this little operation of giving the activists a voice and a platform and a little bit of time to, basically sit back and have a wee bit of a laugh once in a while amidst all this genocide, scumbaggery and skullduggery and terrible other stuff that you have to wind up living your entire life fighting. So, we'll be right back. Don't you go anywhere, folks.